Nuketown Radioactive, number 22, for Monday, December 5th, 2025. So I think that's probably one of the more mellow intros to Radioactive that I've played. That song was Running for the Bus from the Mirror Mask soundtrack. And yes, folks, this is the much-delayed, much-discussed podcast in which I will be reviewing the soundtrack for the movie Mirror Mask. But more on that later. I got a couple other things I want to talk about first. The first thing is... Just a little rant, actually. Just, I don't know, some puzzlement, a topic for you to discuss. I have, for the last couple of weeks, for the last couple of months, I guess, probably since the late spring, I've been getting some review copies of books from authors. And I think no less than two of these books have been the first in a series, and they proudly proclaim this on the cover. And now these are small press books. I don't know if they're self-published. I think for the most part they're fairly small publishers. I'm not going to name names, but anyway, one way or another, these are not mass market paperbacks. And what I don't get is that they're all proudly proclaiming that they are the first in a series, or the first in a trilogy. And, you know, I know that big trilogies, heck, big series, tend to dominate fantasy circles, and science fiction ones as well. So I don't get why a small press publisher and self-publishing authors would insist on emulating this. I mean, I guess if they're trying to be taken seriously, they'll... Maybe that's one of the reasons why they're doing it. They're trying to... be taken seriously, so they figure since the big boys are doing this, they need to do it as well. Maybe it costs too much to print the entire book, so they're gonna do this one-off, lead into a series of smaller books. Either way, I just don't get it, because you know what, as an editor, and hell, as a geek dad, I don't sit there and go, you know what? What new, large, extensive series can I immerse myself in? I've got the Robert Jordan Wheel of Time books. I've got the George R. R. Martin A Song of Fire and Ice books. I don't need anything else. Hell, I'm still trying to finish book 7 of the Dark Tower series. If I haven't finished that book, what makes you think that I'm going to pick up this small press book that says first an exciting new science fiction trilogy and have, you know, be inspired to want to read that book? I mean, I want books, if I'm going to read something above and beyond something, you know, like these series that I'm already kind of have years of my life invested in, I want it to be a short book. I want it to be short, quick, sweet. I want it to be, you know, the kind of thing that I could pick up, blow through in a couple of days, maybe a week or two. And I'm not looking for fluff. I want a good, solid book, but good God, folks, do we really need to launch into another freaking trilogy? So I guess that's my bit of advice if you're a writer. I mean, just coming from an editor, coming from... somebody who's been publishing Nuketown for years and read an awful lot of science fiction. You know, if you're going to... I think if you're going to do the small part market thing, if you're going to do the small press thing, you know, it's good to program against what the big boys are doing, because, you know what, I'm more inclined to read your book if it's shorter. So I think that's enough of beating a particular dead horse. As I said, this podcast is going to be geared primarily towards talking about Mirror Mask, but I do have a side of note that I want to talk about. But before that, the obligatory promo.
This show is part of the Out of This World Entertainment on the Sci-Fi Podcast Network, tsfpn.com.
Now, the site I want to talk about now is called the Hypertext D20 SRD, and this has got to be one of the most useful websites I have ever found. It's one that I use almost daily for my Dungeons & Dragons campaign. And basically, what this site does is take the SRD, the System Resource Document, kind of the core rules for Dungeons & Dragons, stripped down to their most generic format, and makes them into one big, huge website. And the great thing about this is it's got all the classes, the spells, the feats, the skills, magic items, all the kind of meat of the game. The rules as well, conditions, attacks of opportunity, all of that good stuff. But it's online, and it's an easily searchable and bookmarkable format. And mind you, it's also got a boatload of monsters. So how I use this particular site is a couple different ways. First of all, during the week when I'm at work and, you know, I'm on my lunch break or whatever, I use this site so I don't have to haul my books basically to work and sit there with a player's handbook and trying to look up something. With this, I can just go to the site, look up, you know, the spell progression for a cleric or whatever, and be off and running. The other thing I use it for, and the other thing that it's really good for during the week, is when my D&D group, we have a really active message forum. So when we have rule discussions and, you know, well, did this spell really work the way we thought it was supposed to work in the last session? Well, it's great because I can just pull this up, I can cut and paste, I can link directly to a spell description. It's freaking awesome. The other thing that where this has just been a real godsend is in-game. Now, I have a wireless network in my house, I game with a laptop, other guys in the group have laptops, and what that means is we can very easily pull up the D20 SRD and, I won't say instantly, but very quickly find things like condition summaries, look for a rule. I mean, it takes, I wouldn't say less time than it does to look it up in the player's handbook, but I mean, I guess I'm pretty good at it, so I can probably find it. I usually end up finding something before the other guys do, but the cool thing is that, you know, then I can bookmark it if it's something that's going to be a problem or that I know we're going to need to discuss multiple times, like the rules for tripping or grappling or something like that. I can bookmark them and they're there for the next game. The other thing that's really cool is, you know, if I'm have a random encounter or I have something that's in an adventure that you know, pre-published adventure, I have a pretty good chance, if it's a generic creature, of finding it in the D20 SRD, and then I can just have the creature stats up right in front of me, and I can instantly look up things like poison, or incorporealness, or incorporeal, yeah. I get to mangle the language again anyway. But, you know, all these different, like, stats and stuff that are such a part of Dungeons & Dragons, it just makes it so much easier to find it and reference it and stuff. It just makes my life as a DM really easy. So I wholeheartedly recommend checking it out. You can find it at www.d20srd.org, and there'll be a link to that in the show notes. And what can I say, guys? If you're a DM, if you're a player, it's well worth checking out.
On a remote island in Lake Superior, scientists struggle to solve the problem of xenotransplantation using animal tissue to replace failing human organs. Funded by the biotech firm Genada, Dr. Klaus Rumkopf seeks to recreate the ancestor of all mammals. By getting back to the root of our creation, Rumkopf hopes to create an animal with human internal organs. Rumkopf discovers the ancestor, but it's not the small harmless creature he envisions. His genius gives birth to a fast-growing evil that nature eradicated 350 million years ago. An evil now on the loose. And very, very hungry.
Ancestors, the new podcast novel by Scott Sigler, author of Earthcore. Ancestor combines suspense, action-adventure, and science fiction into a weekly serialized drama that will have you on the edge of your aggregator. Sign up for free at www.scottsigler.net/ancestor.
I've written about Mirror Mask before on Nuketown. For those of you who haven't actually heard about it or checked it out, this is a movie by Neil Gaiman and Dave McKean. Neil Gaiman, who you must know from Sandman fame and American Gods and just a bunch of really cool books, teamed up with his longtime illustrator, Dave McKean, to make this movie, which was distributed by Jim Henson Studios. And I've got actually a blog entry about this up on Nuketown called Donning the Mirror Mask, and there'll be a link to that in the show notes. Now, I got the soundtrack a while back from Cinemedia to discuss, and Cinemedia is a firm that, I guess it's like a public relations firm for kind of genre CDs and such. But anyway, I got this a while back, and I've been wanting to review it for a long time, as anyone who's been listening to the podcast knows. The soundtrack is by Ian Bellamy. It's under the label of La La Land Records. It's 1 hour, 13 minutes, and 57 seconds long. And I gotta say, it's something of a difficult soundtrack to review, given that I haven't actually seen the movie, and unfortunately I probably won't see the movie until it's out on DVD, what with it being having a fairly small release, and me being, you know, the aforementioned geek dad who doesn't actually get to go out and see movies all that often. It has... So anyway, I haven't seen the movie, so I'm basically having to review this based strictly on its musical merits, without being able to say, hey, yeah, this is how it fits into the movie. With that in mind, you should pretty much take everything I say with a grain of salt, but here we go. First off, you know, I always have to happily note this when it happens. This album has 30 tracks, which is just freaking great, and thus the duration, hour and 13 minutes. That's just great. I mean, whenever you have a soundtrack, I love it when they give you some real meat and they give you so many different tracks from the movie. I mean, there's nothing worse than buying the soundtrack, think you're going to get the full treatment, and then realizing that the favorite bit of music, the reason why you bought the soundtrack, wasn't on it. Now, I mean, I'm not going to necessarily say that your favorite bit of music is on the soundtrack, but at least, you know, the chances are better. So there, right off, is a good sign. Now, I do want to play a track from, a couple tracks, actually, from the soundtrack. The first one I'm going to play is called Sock Puppets. It's called Sock Puppets/Flyover. And I think it's representative of the playful mix of music on the soundtrack, which ranges from carnival to ethereal. Much of the soundtrack, particularly the first few tracks, and actually some of the latter tracks as well, is this kind of mismatch of styles, kind of like a 1930s circus or a 1940s circus or something like that, mashed together with like a jazz festival, with a few experimental musicians thrown in to liven things up. I mean, it's different. I had fun listening to it, but it's definitely different. So without further ado, here's Sock Puppets. Thank you. So that was Sock Puppets. I do want to note that I did get permission from Cita Media for La La Land Records to be able to play these songs in the podcast. But, you know, there aren't any special releases above and beyond that, guys, so please don't redistribute the music. Next up I want to play is a song called A New Life. It is a fairly short track, and it kind of represents kind of the other extreme of the soundtrack, where it's kind of light, soothing, very enjoyable without being kind of Muzak, you know? It's the kind of, I liked this track, so I figured I better highlight it. But here you go, A New Life. So, like I say, light, enjoyable, a good track. I certainly like it. Now, I think I am going to play one more song, but it's going to be at the end of the podcast after the credits, as you will, which is probably where it ended up playing in the movie, too. But just to kind of sum up this soundtrack, it's fun. I liked listening to it. The carnival stuff kind of threw me for a loop. And I think I might have enjoyed that stuff more if I had a better idea as to what the context was from the movie. That's the kind of thing that I think works better when you've got the visuals playing in your head. I don't know if this is necessarily a soundtrack that I would go out and buy, but I might change my mind after viewing the movie, and I think that's what it basically comes down to. I think this is a enjoyable soundtrack, but I think it will probably have the greatest value for those who've seen Mirror Mask and loved it. So I would recommend waiting to buy it until you're after you've done that. And I don't know exactly what the release date for that movie is on DVD, but I'm assuming it's probably going to come up pretty quickly, just given how it had a fairly short theater run. Now, that's about it for this particular podcast. Fairly short again, but, you know, I really wanted to get Mirror Mask out, and I had to take advantage of my wife going out and Christmas shopping with my daughter. Feedback is always welcome, so you can send it to me at nuketown@gmail.com. You can also Skype me at the username Nuketown. I'm occasionally on there. And finally, there's the forums. The link to both of the forums is in the show notes, but the short version is go to nuketown.com/forum and then look for Radioactive. I'd love to see more activity in the forums. I think I'm going to have to start posting some threads there to try and get conversation going. But, you know, feel free to stop by and just post and say hi. So that's it for now. I'm going to leave you with probably my favorite song off of this particular album, so much so that it's actually on my work playlist. It's called If I Apologize, and I really liked it. So that'll about do it for now. Next up will be the Geek Tree episode, which I think is going to be a lot of fun. I gotta play around with it a little bit. I think I'm going to shoot a little video of the Geek Tree because, God, you know, I really am that geeky, like I said last time, guys. Anyway, here is If I Apologize. I hope you like it. I know I did. One last note, this song is sung by Josephine Kronholm and Ashley Slater.